Chapter 9, The First Races Intervene. A crew of 15 spacesuited people exited the mining dome on the far side of Luna, not far from the deepest point of the South Pole Aitken Basin, 8 miles below the lunar surface. At more than 1,500 miles across, the basin was one of the largest impact craters in the entire solar system. The previous day, a team of 18 had crossed the ragged chain of steep crags called the Leibniz Mountains, located less than an hour's easy flight from Edmondson City. With sunrise imminent, the mining team was preparing for its 14-day shift, after which Luna would revolve away from the sun and leave the basin in darkness. 3 people had remained in the mining dome as support crew. The other 15 were experienced miners who were now beginning their first day of work. Among them was Richard Starlight, the leader of Starlight Enterprise. The basin was a rich source of iron, titanium, and thorium, all of which could be extracted from the lunar soil more easily there than anywhere else on Luna. The sun was just rising over the notched mountains more than 600 miles away. The miners' shadows appeared to be miles long as they strode toward the 2 transport vehicles that would take them to the closest working site. Richard had no need to be among the miners other than the simple joy of being in the field. He walked gladly among them and was looking forward to a day of hard work with tools. A sudden, unexpected glow appeared between the group of miners and the vehicles that were their destination. All of them stopped with a gasp. A figure, shorter than average, in a thick gold space suit, had materialized in their path. His suit cast weak shadows over the gray terrain as it radiated light and heat, for it contained the light and heat of its wearer's 600-degree Fahrenheit home world. "My apologies," rang through the minds of each of the miners, "for this disturbing appearance. I have come for Richard Starlight."
"Janitor!" exclaimed Richard.
"I must speak with you at once," said the janitor. "May I take you from this place for a time? I will return you here when we're done."
"Of course," said Richard. "What is—"
Instantly, the janitor and Richard were standing together in a niche of the Leibniz Mountains. To one side, the mountains sloped away, and far in the distance, Richard could descry the lights of Edmondson City. On 3 other sides, the gray reaches of the mountains rose above them. "You have found the prison planet and its energy source," began the janitor, without preliminary statements. "Your starman, Kathy Foster, sister to David, who gave his life in the conquering of the Xenobots, has come into the vicinity of a renegade Lucian."
"So she has succeeded," said Richard, visibly gratified. "Her initial report gave us much hope that she had found the energy source for Larson's folly. But what is this renegade Lucian?"
"She has indeed discovered and set foot upon Oet, the planetoid that directs the power to Ugtaur, the planet you call Larson's folly, where the armies of the first races are imprisoned." Concern rolled over the janitor's face, just dimly visible through his viewport. "On Oet there lives the last renegade Lucian, the last of his people, who rebelled against the first races countless ages ago and conquered and imprisoned those among us who fought to curtail their malevolence."
"The last Xenobot," whispered Richard, awed.
"No, not a Xenobot," corrected the janitor. "This Lucian did not degenerate into a Xenobot. He has lived in solitude on Oet since not long after the days of the First War, and as the last citizen of Smaeus, the city of the Lucians that the rebels built on Oet at the height of their powers. The city was built for the sole purpose of building and then empowering and protecting the power transmitter that was the Lucian's greatest weapon. It draws energy from dense star material and then transforms it to empower and maintain the singularities on itself and on Ugtaur. This one remains a Lucian in body, though even we of the first races cannot tell what he is in mind. Onoet time moves in swirls and eddies rather than in a forward flow, as is the nature of created things. This one has no sense of time passing, no understanding of past or future or of present. You have known this always? Asked Richard, with a hint of reproach, and never told us?
There was no need for you to know, Richard Starlight, returned the janitor. Not even when you discovered Ook Tower by chance 8 years ago. Until now, this has been a matter for the first races alone. It was on these planets that the battles of the first wars were fought, and it is on them that the warriors of those who opposed the renegade Lucians are held captive in time stasis. The singularities cannot be affected by anything that you can do, or by anything that we of the active first races can do. Even we cannot free the captives. The obvious peril and excessive hostility of the prison planet have kept you from tampering with it, or even doing much more than observing it. Now, however, your starman Kathy Foster has set foot upon Oet. This is the planet connected to Ook Tower by a power stream. The renegade Lucian who is there will not leave her unscathed. A shot of sudden apprehension went through Richard. He was beginning to fear the janitor's purpose in meeting with him so urgently. What will he do? Demanded Richard, his heart beating very fast. We cannot predict, said the janitor. We cannot know what he has said or done to Kathy Foster, nor can we know what she has experienced on Oet. We know that she has entered Smaeus and must have encountered the Lucian. He would not ignore such an incursion. There has been no living being on Oet other than himself for uncounted ages. The city was abandoned shortly after the First War, leaving only the Lucian to maintain the power system that kept Ook Tower uninhabitable in the time stasis inviolate. He is of the race that had mastered space-time when he began his charge. It is likely that he alone of all living beings retains the knowledge of that ancient science. Moreover, Oet has been cast into the deeps of space and belongs now to no star system. It is in near utter darkness. This Lucian has lived in solitude among volatile temporal flows for nearly his entire life. We of the first races cannot understand them or him. He lives alone in his own mind. He has related with no other living being. There is nothing like him anywhere in the galaxy. For some time, nothing passed between Richard and the janitor. Then at length, Richard addressed a thought to his visitor. What would you have me do? The janitor showed an uncharacteristic pause. Richard Starlight, this situation is unprecedented. Though we have observed this Lucian, we have avoided him. But now that a contact has been made, the course of events is entirely unpredictable. But we of the first races have a proposal. Starman Kathy Foster paid careful attention to the passing of time. If she were to return to the Raptor without cutting her air supply too closely, she had about 3 hours more to engage the computer system of the inner ring of the city. She was aware that she was becoming unnaturally tired, much more tired than she ought to have felt after only 14 hours. She pursued her exploration of the images that hovered in space around her, learning how to enter into them with her mind. Keeping her mind focused as she slipped into exhaustion became more and more challenging. As her mental faculties blurred with her fatigue, she found that she made unintentional links with the images, and they dragged her through spaces she had no intention of following. To escape, she shook her head, refocused, and slowly returned to her reality. She came to feel like a small child playing among potent wonders that could prove very dangerous. Her mind began to reel and sway, and her eyes kept watering and blinking. Finally, she ceased to concentrate and pulled back into herself. She shut her eyes and tried to think of something familiar. She made herself remember sensations and experiences from her daily life. Memories of her favorite foods came to her.
spaghetti with sautéed onions, meat sauce, herbs. She remembered the aroma. The memory of the distinct taste of freshly made garlic bread made her mouth water. "What is that?" came the voice. "Amazing. Something I don't know." "You intrigue me now, Starman Kathy Foster." "Show me more." Kathy felt too tired to resist the intrusive voice. "It's food. My favorite food," she thought. She shook her head again and opened her eyes. She sat bolt upright and stared unseeing. "Why am I here?" she thought toward the voice. "Why have you left me to wander through your inner city? What do you want me to find?" There was no answer. Suddenly she felt energized, even euphoric. Then she felt abject fear and cried aloud. Then she felt a surge of adrenaline and a firm desire to act boldly. Then she felt hunger, hunger to the point of starvation. A pounding headache burst between her temples, and she felt weak and faint. Next, she felt completely sated. With panicky alarm, she knew she was being played like an instrument. The voice was tormenting her, or maybe merely exploring her psyche and physical reactions the way she was exploring the images in the room where she was sitting. "Stop it," she ordered vehemently. "You've no right to use me like this." A feeling of curiosity wafted over her, a feeling she discerned as coming from beyond her, but no words accompanied the feeling. "If you want to show me something, show me," she ordered. "Stop playing with me." Immediately she felt a complete absence of any other being. An overpowering sense of wretched solitude swelled into her, of there being no other living, thinking, feeling entity of any kind for light years in every direction. She was pierced with an unfathomable dread, as if plunged without warning into an icy, heaving ocean that was working to engulf her. But within a few seconds, she had collected herself and calmed her gut reaction. Her months of battling loneliness on the raptor had given her the resources for rebuffing the experience of absolute disconnection. "You intrigue me, Starman Kathy Foster." The words came into her mind with a slow deliberation. "Now look, then, and you will see what you came after." One of the images that was floating in the air around her came close and opened up. Helplessly, she drifted into it. She saw deep stone walls, black and high and sparkling, and then she passed through the space in between them until they fell behind her. She was floating in space, a swath of millions of stars, mostly white but also red and blue and violet, extended before her like a pathway, though it lay light years below her feet. She saw an armada of hundreds of spacecraft coming toward her, spacecraft of advanced design that she knew she'd never seen before, yet which looked familiar. With a sudden realization, she remembered that they were the ships whose ruins she had seen in the time stasis that her modified Reconobut had descried. A startling and ominous vibration coursed through her body, and she felt energy pulse from somewhere behind her and move onward. Wave after wave of the ships of the Armada disappeared as if caught by giant hands and drawn into oblivion. When the Armada was gone, she saw a planet sweep near, and she hovered over it, watching an enormous host of ships on the ground, surrounded by buildings of spectacular beauty, set among meadows and groves. It was all suddenly frozen white and silver. The ground upon which it all lay heaved like a turbulent ocean, and then that too froze in place. And then a hoary diaphanous veil was drawn over the scene. After a few moments in which Kathy puzzled over what she was seeing, there was an eruption of violent swirling clouds and jagged light that filled her entire field of vision and obliterated all she had seen before. "You know this planet," said the voice, "though you have never seen it." Then the planet disappeared under a fold of darkness, followed by another fold and yet another. "Ah," said the voice, "next." A field of stars rushed under her and around her, followed by the deeps of interstellar space and then more stars. And then one star became more luminous, and its surrounding stars faded and dropped out of view. With a rapid heartbeat, Kathy recognized her own sun. Saturn flew past her, just barely recognizable before vanishing. And then she saw Mania, and then Earth. As she watched, both planets took on a silver tint, as in the early stages of icing over. She experienced the voice's elation at precisely the moment she felt the billow of panic fill her. She wanted to shriek uncontrollably. In an instant, the dream disappeared, and Kathy found herself standing on the bridge of the Raptor. The hollow screen was tuned to an overhead view of the inner ring of buildings. Rachel was standing in front of it, studying it carefully. Kathy's shriek burst from her, and she began to waver on her feet. Rachel whirled around. "How did you get on board?" she cried, running to assist the Starman. She caught her before she fell and eased her to the floor. Rachel carefully removed Kathy's helmet and began checking her for injuries. Gradually, Kathy got control of her panicked, rapid breathing, extricated herself from Rachel's attentions, and crawled over to her chair and then wearily pulled herself into it. She felt cold chills running down her spine. "He toyed with me. If he can transport me here that easily, then he can surely vaporize this ship at a whim. And now he knows about Earth and Amania. He plans to capture us just as he did the first races, and nothing we can do can stop him."